T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome back. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Dan Wilson behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. Bottom of the hour, 8:30. Leading off, we'll get you set for the Phillies and the Mariners tonight over in Seattle T-Mobile Park. Phillies road trip out west begins tonight. We'll get to that. Bo Wolf in just a minute. Right now, though, Gus in Bethlehem. He's excited for the Sixers, I'm sure. What's up, Gus?
First of all, Joe, the Denver Nuggets have a much better, much more talented squad than the Sixers do, even with their injuries this year.
No,
the
they
Sixers
don't.
The Sixers really don't have that not much talent. They
but
don't.
But, Gus, Tyrese Maxey's better than any player that without the injured players next to Jokic.
The Sixers have Embiid and Maxey. They're their two really outstanding players, really. Yeah,
but who other than Murray, who was hurt all year, and Porter, who's outstanding next to Jokic?
I just think they have a deeper squad, and when Jokic goes off the court, the fall off isn't as precipitous as with the Sixers. And Embiid goes off the court, it's lights out.
Right.
It's not even close.
But we're acknowledging that the Sixers have Maxey. They don't have a player like Maxey.
All right, but I still submit that defensively, rebounding, the whole nine yards, Embiid's impact, and you see it in this series, is like a team that wouldn't make the playoffs without Embiid.
Well, he's a great player. I mean, that's why he's an MVP candidate. He's amazing.
And I really think the Sixers do not have as much talent as people think they do. And that's another reason why I think Doc is a very, very underrated coach. And this idea that he is going to be taken to school by Durst and Spoelstra because they're so superior, I just think that's been proven not true.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. We'll see. Well, he's not as good
as those guys. He's a comparable coach. He's out-coached Spoelstra in this series. What the hell is Spoelstra doing with his bench? It makes no sense what he's doing.
Yeah, but who's been a better coach in the NBA, Spoelstra or Doc?
No, I think they're neck and neck. I don't really think there's any difference. I'd rather have Doc, to be honest. I just think Doc's a person that talks more straight to me, and that Riley is basically the guy that's, you know, ruling that.
Stop. That's not fair to Spoelstra.
All right, well, anyway, listen, I'm telling you, I'd hate to live off the difference. I don't think it's all that big a deal, all right? I really don't. I don't think that's determining these games. It's players on the court that will. And that takes me to my other interesting point. Oh, I want to say one thing before I get to that point. Kenny Smith made a really great observation last night.
What did he say?
He said that when James Harden goes into his you know, drum solo routine, you know, where he's dribbling.
Yeah.
If he does it for more than 4 or 5 seconds, he fails. If he does it for four seconds, he succeeds. That's a really interesting point. Last night he was dribbling like for maybe 4.5 seconds before launching. In these other games, he'd be dribbling like maybe 5, 6, 7 seconds and failing. Interesting.
I wonder if it's a rhythm thing for him.
I don't know what it is, but it seems. Broke that the rhythm that was failing for a new rhythm that succeeded. We'll see if we see that tomorrow. It's really interesting. I was very intrigued by that. Sort of a smart guy about point guards. But what I wanted to say about Danny Green, the roller coaster of Danny Green is really fascinating to me. Danny Green went from being, to me, kind of a goat in that I think Doc made a big mistake putting him on Trae Young last year. I thought that was Doc's big mistake last year. Then he gets hurt, and I said, they're going to really miss Danny Green.
And they did. I think they would have won the series if he didn't get hurt last year.
I was laughed at for that. Now you see, and he looked terrible during the regular season, but what would we be without him in this series?
Well, in trouble. I mean, really, really in trouble. And Gus, listen, we appreciate the phone call. It's funny, Danny Green, it's such a weird career bouncing around. He's won everywhere. He won a title at UNC. And he won titles with 3 different teams in the NBA. We'll see if he can make it a fourth. And tomorrow night, the Sixers in a game they got to get. They got to get game 5 if they want to go and win this series. Let's go to the guest line right now, though. Bo Wolf of The Athletic joining us now to talk some Eagles post-draft. And, of course, with the schedule release coming out this week. Bo, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
Bo, we're doing great. Excited to talk to you. And, boy, a lot has changed, I believe, since the last time we talked with this team, this offseason. And, you know, it was kind of weird. You know, the offseason began and the Eagles didn't really declare themselves either way. Like, are they trying to win now? Or are they, is this about the future? I feel like the tenor of this offseason and just the way fans are talking about them, draft night changed everything here, Bo.
Yeah, and I think it's a good example of, you know, something my Birds with Friends co-host Zach Berman likes to say. It's that sometimes, you know, the best moves you make are the ones that you don't do. So, like, if you think about what the Eagles tried to do this offseason at wide receiver, you know, they tried to be involved in a Calvin Ridley trade. They tried to make a play to sign Christian Kirk or Allen Robinson. They knew that they needed to upgrade that wide receiver position. And I think we can all agree that they probably wouldn't have acquired A.J. Brown if one of those things had happened, and that it's much better that they were able to acquire A.J. Brown, even for the cost. I mean, this is a 24-year-old who turns 25 in June who can play at an all-pro level, and I think, like, single-handedly changes the ceiling of this offense to sort of an extreme degree.
Bo, what did you think of the rest of the draft? Obviously, Brown, you know, happening on draft night kind of changed the perception of the draft, but what did you think what they did with their other picks? And really, the question I have is do you think the Jordan Davis pick was, A, the right one and worth the trade-up? I like Davis a lot. I think there's more upside there than some people do, and I'm excited about it, but I can acknowledge he's a defensive tackle, didn't rush the passer, you know, or at least get sacks much in college. There is some downside or worry to the idea of drafting this player and hoping he could be a different kind of player as his career goes on. What would you make of the draft, specifically Jordan Davis?
Yeah, I think just in general, you know, they would tell you that they wish they had more volume than just drafting five players, especially, you know, in the first four rounds or so, only having those first three round picks. But that's the cost for moving up to take Jordan Davis and obviously going to acquire A.J. Brown. I think in total on the ledger, I think they would obviously take that. And as for Jordan Davis, like, I'm with you. I'm a little bit skeptical because, you know, he played for four seasons at Georgia, not just three. So there's, like, he is who he is to a little bit more degree of certainty than some other players. Like, if he had come out as an underclassman, but if somebody is going to buck the trend of turning, like, not a lot of sack production in college into sack production in the NFL, it's probably Jordan Davis, just considering the tools in his body. I mean, he's, like, pound for pound, maybe the best athlete to enter the league in a long time. So I understand that. Now, like, we know that the Eagles' organizational emphasis is always going to be on the line of scrimmage. You know, Howie Roseman said as much, you know, when explaining why they took Cam Jurgens over N'Kobe Dean in the second round. He said, I'm always going to default to the line of scrimmage, and that explains why, you know, he moved up to get Jordan Davis when some people would have said that Kyle Hamilton would have been the top player on the board, the Notre Dame safety. And, you know, I did the exercise I do every year to just, like, make a pick when the Eagles are on the clock and who would I pick. Not to say that I know more, but just to sort of, like, let's follow how much somebody who is not in the building, like, how luck-driven this process is. And I had him picking Kyle Hamilton, and obviously that's what the Ravens did. So it will be interesting to follow, but knowing that, like, this is Howie Roseman's emphasis and always will be, I think what they did made a lot of sense.
What did you think of Hamilton? Because I think that those two will be compared for a long time, because the Eagles theoretically could have had either one, and they chose Jordan Davis over Kyle Hamilton there with the trade-up. I liked him, very productive in college. I just couldn't get past – it's almost like Jordan Davis, I could get past the worry. I couldn't get past him running slow, and he's big. And I kind of worry if you're big and long strides at safety, can you keep up with 4.2, 4.3 speed at wide receiver? So he worried me more than Davis. What do you think of Hamilton? Obviously, the Ravens, it's a good organization, so they'll probably figure it out with him. But what did you think of him as a player?
Yeah, I sort of trusted the people who believe that he is, you know, easily the top safety in the draft and potentially, you know, can enter the league and play at a Pro Bowl level very quickly. And that's why I would have taken him over Davis. But I think it's also important to, like, think about the Eagles' defense and Jonathan Gannon's defense. And I worry sometimes that teams or the Eagles in particular focus too much on, like, immediate scheme fit with the coaching staff, especially at the top of the draft. You know, this is part of the reason they took Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson a couple of years ago. And, like, in Jonathan Gannon's defense, the safeties play super deep, right? Like, so you don't really need a star player at that position for the defense to work. That's part of the reason that they haven't really addressed the top of that position this offseason. But, like, there's no guarantee that Jonathan Gannon's going to be here long term. He almost got a head coaching job last offseason. So what if the next defensive coordinator comes in and, you know, envisions a really important role for the safety or for Kyle Hamilton or whoever that is? So I worry about that sometimes. And you know, in the first round, in the first three rounds especially, to me it's just about getting, like, who is the best player for this franchise, adding, like, quality young talent that is cost-controlled. And you think about how much the young talent on this roster has changed since the beginning of last year's draft, and it's really an impressive job that Howie Roseman and the Eagles have done, how much young talent they have added. So I would have gone Hamilton, but I understand and not surprised that the Eagles, you know, went with the defensive lineman, obviously, over the season.
Bo, you mentioned all that young talent and how this team has kind of changed over. One of the common denominators of a lot of these players, especially the top of the last couple drafts, is where they're coming from. Alabama, Georgia, you could even go back, you know, 3 years ago now to Jalen Hurts in the second round out of Oklahoma, but before that, Alabama. I don't think this is by accident. It seems like they're trying to, you know, change the culture here a little bit, bring in guys that have won in college. What do you think about this? Obviously, I think everyone would say that's a good thing. Do you think it matters? Have you noticed a culture change just covering the team? Because I think this is pretty intentional, what Howie Roseman and the Eagles are trying to do the last couple years.
Yeah, and I asked Howie Roseman this during one of the pre-draft or the post-draft press conferences, whether this is intentional to go, you know, two players on the national championship winning offense last year and two players from the national championship winning defense this year at the top of the draft. And he said, you know, sometimes if you do this long enough, you realize that you can sort of overthink it sometimes, and maybe it does make sense to just get the best players from the best teams. And he said that it is intentional. So I believe that. I thought last year it was a little bit more about bringing in guys to help build, you know, Nick Sirianni's culture. You were sort of starting a new program, so it made sense to bring in guys from the best program in Devontae Smith and Landon Dickerson. This year, I think it's probably less about culture, although, you know, you could make the case that N'Kobe Dean is like as big a culture guy as it gets. Everybody says that he was the leader of that defense. But I think now it's more about just sort of following the talent, and maybe, like, a part of it is, well, it worked so well last year, why not just do it again? And you're sort of overlearning that lesson. But I think there's no doubt that like this iteration of Howie Roseman, you know, Howie Roseman 3.0 or whatever you want to call it, I think probably is going to lean towards those type of players from those type of programs.
We're talking to Bo Wolf for The Athletic. Bo, one of the holes still on this team, or at least an uncertain position, is corner. The opposite side of Darius Slay, obviously Maddox is good in the slot, but the other side is wide open. They got a lot of undrafted guys and guys, that young guys from last year, but it's really just throwing darts at a dartboard. But today the New York Giants released James Bradberry. What do you think of the player, and do you think there's a chance he does end up as an Eagle?
I think there's a chance. I think there's probably going to be a little bit more competition for him than, you know, it's not like they're going to be able to scoop him up for, you know, 1 year, $5 million or something like that. And he's almost too good of a player for the Eagles. I'm a little bit less concerned about that cornerback position than some people, partly because there's still a long way to go until the regular season, even a long way to go until training camp. Just think, last year they signed Steven Nelson at the beginning of training camp off the street, and he was a fine starter for them, given what they asked from their second corner, which is not a lot. And so it makes sense to me that they would want to see what the guys like, you know, Zach McPherson and Tay Gowan and these guys can do over the course of the offseason program, decide how aggressive they want to be in filling that spot. I thought it would have made sense for them to draft a corner in the first, you know, two rounds or so. And I think they would have loved to maybe move up for Sauce Gardner or Derek Stingley if they had fallen a little bit farther, because it's not just about filling that, you know, starting cornerback job opposite Darius Slay. It's more about finding who's going to be your number one corner when Darius Slay is gone, because, you know, he's going to be turning 31 soon. So they need to think about that long term. But as for, like, the short term, there are still guys like starting caliber veteran corners who could fill in, who are on the street. As for Bradberry, my sense is they probably want to see what they have with these guys. If you sign Bradberry, he's taking all the reps in the spring. You forget about those guys. I feel like a team like the Chiefs or somebody else is going to be willing to pay him more than the Eagles might be willing to.
Yeah, it certainly could end up that way. Bo, it's been an interesting offseason. I think in totality, the Eagles have had a pretty good offseason now when you add it all together, and they've gotten better, built on what they had heading into the offseason. And I think the Dallas Cowboys have had a pretty bad offseason with a lot of departures, salary cap issues over there. I'm not sure that first-round pick is going to be a great player. We'll see the offensive lineman they got. Have the Eagles closed the gap enough compared to last year? I mean, last year was pretty clear. Dallas was by far the best team in this division. How would you handicap that now as we head towards this kind of dead period? Eagles catching the Cowboys, how close do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's very close. I think it's sort of a toss-up. I think the Eagles probably have a better top-to-bottom roster, maybe, but you still give the edge to the better quarterback in Dak Prescott. If there was, a water gun to my back, I would say I would probably go with the better quarterback. But I think the Eagles have definitely closed the gap, and I would not be surprised at all if they win the division. The flip side to that is, it's always you're always guarded against, well, they exceeded our expectations last year. Now they've got our hopes up. They're going to go and finish third or fourth in the division, right? So who knows what's going to happen. That's sort of the beauty of the NFL.
Bo, last one for you. Schedule release on Thursday. We already know one of the games. The home opener is the one of the Monday night games in week two against the Minnesota Vikings. Do you have a preference on the schedule as someone who covers the team? Road games early, places you don't like to go or cover? I always wonder, because from my perspective, doing the pregame stuff, especially for the road games, I do have a preference. I'd rather have the Eagles have more home games early, so I'm not outside in the cold with the pregame show. I have a preference. Yeah. Do you have a preference?
Well, this road game schedule is not the most exotic of road game schedules that the Eagles have had in recent years. So the two things I'm hoping for are Chicago early in the season for the same weather reasons you're talking about. I don't want to be going to Chicago in December. And then Arizona at the end of the season when you want to get that getaway to a nicer location. So those are the two things I'm hoping for. And also, just as a selfish beat reporter, let's stay away from the holiday nights so we can stay with the family on those.
I hear you on those. Yeah, see, it's okay we're selfish about this. Everyone's got to be selfish once in a while. Bo, we appreciate it. We'll be reading over The Athletic and listening to Birds with Friends. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
There he goes. Bo Wolf there. Selfish. You have any selfish preferences with the schedule, Dan?
I'm trying to so last year I did a lot of overnights into Eagles games. So any game that was not a 1 p.m. start was good for me. I actually have different preferences, maybe just from I've always been naturally a night owl, and working here has certainly enhanced that. So I like the night games. I kind of thrive on those. I like the 4:25, the 8:20 starts. 1 o'clock Sundays, especially early in the year. I know it might be warmer out there for you doing the pregame show, but it doesn't have as much juice to me.
So I do the road pregame shows with Glenn and
sure,
Ross Tucker.
You're not usually there for home.
So games. I used to be. I'm not sure because things change. But a couple years ago, I would hang out with DeCameron Ritchie during their pregame show.
Okay.
For the home games, so I was out for every home game, just not at the not at Head House Plaza with Glenn and that crew. I was kind of with Ritchie and DeCamera over by Wells Fargo Center. But whatever, I was outside for all the home games. So I
late in the year is cold.
Oh, it's brutal. It's cold. It's just cold for hours and hours.
Not much changes for me because I anticipate, although things change, we don't know exactly. The past couple of seasons, or at least last season, I'm here home or road. My job doesn't really change. I'm cutting highlights. I'm running the stream, things like that here in the studio. So I'm here whenever the game is, no matter what the schedule is, holiday, night, weekend, whatever. The weirdest thing that happened last year was the game against Washington on the Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
So, we're not – that felt really, really weird coming in here on a Tuesday night for an Eagles game because we're – usually it's just every Sunday. It's the same crew. You're here. Glenn's here. Whoever's here. That was weird. But, no, I don't really mind it too much. I certainly early in radio career, I'm kind of used to working nights, weekends, holidays anyway, but I can understand why people would want to avoid those. Last year, again, me being Jewish doesn't matter – too much, but the 1 o'clock game against the Giants the day after Christmas I know was tough for some people, but that's just how it goes. Sports and entertainment doesn't really stop for holidays, weekends, or anything for that matter.
No, that's true. I think the NFL has three Christmas games this year, so I will
be doing
a
Black Friday game this year.
Yes.
Thanksgiving, I mean, just any holiday they're getting games in.
Yeah, I'll be rooting against the Christmas, Bo's thing. I don't want to have to come in here Christmas morning. I mean, it's the
Christmas morning we're previewing, an Eagles playoff run maybe.
Well, that hopefully if the game matters, at least there'll be some juice behind it. Actually, the you were mentioning night games. The ones my least favorite are actually the 4:25 games, and I have a very selfish reason on that. Night games, I kind of like. It's standalone, right? It's just the game by itself. And 1 o'clock games, I like that as well. 4 o'clock, I struggle with because of this. So when I do the pregame for the 4 o'clock game, we're on from 2 to 4 p.m. which means I have
the witching hour. You miss it.
Yeah, well, I have to make a choice. Do I like half pay attention to what Glennon and Ross are saying and I'm watching Red Zone on my phone, or do I lock into the pregame and then I'm missing the rest of the NFL from 2 to 4? So, obviously, I'm paying attention to the show, but I'd rather, like, if we're on at 1, if the game starts at 1, there's nothing on. Like, I'm not missing anything. It's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm just hanging out. We're doing the pregame show, getting ready, then I sprint home and watch the game. So, selfishly, I do like the 1 o'clock games, but I think we need some more primetime games. Last year, and I understood, they were coming off a 4-11-1 season. How many primetime games did they end up with? They had the week 3 in Dallas, which was a disaster. And then they had the Tuesday night game? Is that it?
No, they did Thursday night against the Bucks
right.
in October.
Right, every team gets one Thursday
and
night.
Then they got that Monday night game against the Cowboys that didn't mean anything.
They played... That was Saturday.
Sorry, Saturday.
Saturday
but it
right.
was still a standalone
You're right.
game.
So it was
It was the Monday Night Crew on Saturday. Yes. Yeah.
Special Monday night, Saturday night fair.
Monday Night Football on Saturday.
Whatever.
Is what
it's
it was.
So stupid when they do that. But we already know they have one primetime game. I imagine. I'm thinking about it from the perspective of they made the playoffs last year. There's a little
like
buzz.
How many did they get?
Yeah, there's a little buzz about them now. AJ Brown.
Well, they expanded flex scheduling about a year or two also, so like they could just get moved into more.
Sure, if they're good, they'll be in more towards the end of the season. I mean, I would guess there's at least 3 on the schedule, maybe a 4th, but then they're going to have – there's no way there's not 3, right? So you're going to have the Minnesota game Monday Night Football Week 2. They're going to play a Thursday game because everyone has to play
and
a Thursday
And they'll get a
game.
Sunday night game against the Cowboys or the Giants.
Yeah, late in the season.
Sometimes it's early in the season.
Or it could be like they love to do those Eagles Cowboys like October.
So one,
Halloween
yeah,
or something.
At least 3 or 4.
Yeah. Maybe more. We'll see. I mean, there's 17 weeks now or 18 weeks.
Yes. Did you do the, just really quick going back to your pregame stories, did you do the pregame the day they play in London?
Yes. We started at 6 a.m. Eastern.
I mean, that's weird.
And so, well, it was. It was actually kind of cool in a weird way. I mean, I was tired, but it was kind of cool. So the other part about that was unique. You know, we were speaking last hour about Ray Dittinger and WIP legends. So I remember that week, Spike Eskin, who was obviously still here then, he like talked to us all. And it was this weird thing. We tried to make it all work for everybody. But he was like, so Sonny Hill's never missed a show.
He's got to keep the hitting streak alive.
This is Cal Ripken, right? Yeah, he's never missed a show. He's the Iron Man. He's never missed a show. So Spike had the idea, like, can we incorporate him into the pregame show? And obviously, I mean, everyone said yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So he came in. He came in at, I guess it was 9 o'clock. He came in for the final, or 8 o'clock, whatever it was.
Okay.
But for the final hour, maybe just a segment, I forget now. But he did part of the pregame show with us, so he could say...
He's been on the air every Sunday.
Every Sunday
He doesn't
morning.
Miss any holidays, by
Never.
The way.
Never. No. I think even...
He worked a Christmas morning a few years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, no. I mean, he's been here every week for forever. So that was kind of cool. Like, not only are we getting ready, we're doing a pregame show for a game in London, and we're starting at 6 or 7 a.m., whatever it was, but Sonny Hill's part of it. That was a lot
How
of
would
fun.
You like, by the way, so Rod Lakin, our program director, just came from Arizona and told us the story, I remember the first week, that I think the station he came from did the Cardinals... And their pregame started either 3 or 4 hours beforehand. And you're on the West Coast. You're playing 1 o'clock games on the East Coast. That's 10 a.m. local. That they would do, like, that's pretty frequent for them. Like, a couple times a year.
Oh, yeah.
There are shows like that.
Early games.
Like, so, like, that was totally a weird East Coast thing. But could you imagine that 9:30 a.m. game started at 6:30 on the West Coast?
Have you ever traveled to a different, like, time zone and watched
yes.
sports?
So, yeah, it throws me off.
What's the furthest view on West Coast or further?
Europe? I was in Israel once.
So what is that? You're forward?
Forward by about 6-7 hours, something like that. So like...
Yeah, that's
like
weird.
Philly 7:05 games were coming on at like... let's see. No,
past midnight.
So it like well past midnight. It was like right. in the middle of the night. Whereas I think I distinctly remember... This was there was radio.com back then, listening to the station...
Oh, wow.
And, like, the afternoon show, because I was an avid listener even back
yeah.
then. I forget who was on at this point, but, like, one of the – Angela was on either in, like, the middle of the night or, like, at night. Like, or Angela was coming on at, like, 6 p.m. Like, it was totally weird and that it would go that far off. But sometimes it's enough to screw up the other way. I remember going – the furthest I've been in this country is, yeah, California, San Francisco. And I remember going – so I've been to Oracle Park back when it was called AT&T.
I always wanted to go there.
It's a very, very cool stadium. And the night games there, like all the 10 o'clock Eastern time games come on at 7 locally.
Right.
But it was weird that the Phillies were playing every day at 4. And then the game ends, and my East Coast brain is like, all right, who are the late games? It's like, that's it. Like, they don't have any sports come on after that, but also all the East Coast sports come on in the middle of the day. I think I like, at least in my 20s, I think I like the East Coast better.
Yeah, I mean, when you get older, you might want to sleep.
I might prefer the West Coast.
Yeah. So the furthest I've gone, I went to Hawaii on my honeymoon in 2011. So I wasn't watching much sports. We were doing stuff, you know, yes. Adventures and volcanoes and
what
whatever.
What month was it?
It was July. So it was baseball season.
Oh, you did
season.
A baseball season.
Yeah. So, but I thought it was cool that, like, when I woke up in the morning, I turned the TV on, there was baseball. Because it was like, you know, it was a Saturday or something.
Sure.
And, like, so 1 o'clock games at 7 a.m., they were starting. Like, I was like, I can watch baseball when I wake
like
up.
This early?
Yeah. I think Marks has talked about it. Marks lived in Hawaii for a little bit.
Yeah, he did, a few years.
And so, like, Eagles games, he'd watch, like, in the morning, like, at 7 a.m.
Yeah, it's too early for – I can't get revved up for an Eagles game at 7 a.m.
You probably have to wake up at 6 to, like, rev yourself
to really
up,
get
coffee.
I remember I was in college at Temple the day of that 9:30 game. And, I people do stuff on Friday and Saturday nights.
Right.
I had to set an alarm for the game, like, to make sure – I'm like, I don't want to miss this. Like, this is history. They're playing in London. And also, I just watch the Eagles every week. But so we had a watch party, and we're screaming at the TV at 9:30. We're like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Like, people are going – everyone else who wasn't into sports is going down to breakfast. And we're like, all right, Eagles, right now.
The other – and last thing I'll hit on, and then we have leading off coming up bottom of the hour. The other memory I have of Hawaii is there's one sports talk – there's one, like, local sports talk radio station in Hawaii.
In Honolulu, yeah. What do they talk about? Like, Hawaii sports? Like, Hawaii college sports?
Yeah, but they do – like, they bring guests on, like, national guests.
Okay.
They try to do, like –
national, I
yeah,
guess,
yeah, I mean – but I think the guy who hosts it is the voice of Hawaii, like, football. So, like, it's a local-centric type of thing. But – I remember I was in the car we rented, and I turned it on because I was interested because it was right around trade deadline or late July. Like, that's the time we were out there.
Yeah.
And I was there for when the Eagles signed Namdi. And
so this is 2011 you're on?
Yeah, 2011. Okay. The lockout ended, and I heard it on the radio in Hawaii because there was a lockout.
That's how you found out.
Yeah, the lockout ended, and then everything started happening fast, and I'm like, you know, my wife's like, we really have to listen to this here. Like, we're going.
You're hearing dream team cuts. Yeah.
Yeah, like, what are we doing here? And I'm like, well, the lockout's over. Football's back. Like, and, you know, that was weird. Like, when's football coming back? And, but yeah, I always remember I was in Hawaii listening to sports talk radio when the lockout ended and the dream team began. All right, we got leading off coming up on the other side. We'll get the lineups player to count on everything you need to know for the Phillies and the Mariners at the start of a road trip. The Phillies are without two of their top pitchers, and hopefully they wake up here because it has been a rough start to the season. Philly talk coming up, 215-592-9494 at Sports Radio 94 WIP. The playoffs are here, and you can make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook in partnership with Valley Forge Casino, an official partner of the NBA throughout the playoffs. All customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay each week. You get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel has so many ways to play. Best of all, when you do win, you get paid faster than a fast break. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official partner of 94 WIP. New to FanDuel? Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up promo code GILIO. Once again, that's promo code GIGLIO. If you already have an account, you're all set to bet, no sweat. Either way, you get up to $20 in free bets if your same-game parlay during the playoffs has a win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the pitch, hit, and run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.